The Guardian.
Hello, wonderful people, and welcome to another star-spangled Guardian film show. What a repertoire we have this week. We have the intergalactic adventure, the mafia hit, the period French fancy, and what may well be the most wild movie biopic you'll see all year. In the words of the great Liberace, we love to give people a good time. Playing loud on this week's show, Michael Douglas takes the show to the bedroom in Behind the Candelabra. Michael Shannon cometh for the kill as the Iceman. And Audrey Tautou is getting married alive in Thérèse Desquerro. First up, though, it's After Earth, in which Will Smith stars with his son Jaden as two spacemen from the future who crash land on an abandoned planet. The Guardian's Paul McInnes sat down with the film's director, M. Night Shyamalan.
Crash landed. Two confirmed survivors. Do you know where we are?
No, sir.
This is Earth.
What would happen if we left here or died off? What would happen to everything else? And that's such a fascinating question. So there were some experts that theorized that the sky would get blighted by birds because the birds would procreate so much, you know? And obviously all the foliage would exponentially grow. The entire planet would be just flush green from beginning to end. And of course, animal life would just explode because of that. Actually, there's one expert that said that, dogs, if like we disappeared right now, the domestic dogs and cats would overrun.
Really?
Yeah. And I actually had a whole sequence, which I didn't actually shoot, where there was like raids of all these cats over the spaceship that crashed.
Why would they overrun? Because they know how to deal with the remains of humans.
Well, there's so many now, and they would be procreating everywhere, you know, and they would just multiply. Our pets would then become the dominant thing.
Everything on this planet has evolved to kill humans. Together, we will survive.
They've left Earth because it became inhospitable to humans.
Correct.
And they come back, and it's still inhospitable to humans in some ways that are kind of unusual.
Yes.
One of which being that the atmosphere has changed.
Yes,
That people can't breathe anymore.
Yes.
So they have to kind of eat these Oreo cookies.
Yeah, that are white. They're kind of like inhalers, and they're... You know, all of that's based on my daughter has asthma, and you know, I'm fascinated by asthma actually, because as you can tell in Signs, I did a whole thing on asthma. You know, that one in six emergency room cases in the United States is related to asthma. You know, everyone has trouble breathing now. We're getting more and more allergic to the environment. When we were kids, there was no peanut allergies. I remember some kid in some school, you know, 100 miles away, oh, he's allergic to peanuts. Ooh, what a weird kid.
Yeah.
Every school, in every class, there's somebody allergic to something and you can't bring something to school.
No.
Everyone's getting so sensitive, more and more so, and it makes me go, are we quietly being squeezed out?
I'm joined now by the Guardian film critic Peter Bradshaw and films editor Catherine Shaw. Peter, Catherine and I sadly avoided a trip to After Earth, but you went and came out alive.
There was nothing sad about that experience. I'm the sad one. I'm afraid it is awful. It is absolutely awful. It's one of the great mysteries how this director, who started off so promisingly with two rather excellent films, The Sixth Sense and then Unbreakable, very interesting movie, Unbreakable. Now it's his career that's unbreakable. No matter how many bad movies he makes, he still keeps coming back, making bad movies. This is awful. It's inert. It's plodding. It's badly acted. It's badly scripted. Even the effects, which are supposed to be so state-of-the-art, using the very, very newest digital cameras, they just don't look all that great. You can see the kind of green screen, which is just awful. And Will Smith, who is usually such an open and engaging actor, usually so limber and humorous and all the rest of it, he has to be very dull and withdrawn and pompous as this intergalactic general, having this tense relationship with his headstrong teen son, who just happens to be played by Jaden, of course. They must have been auditioned thousands of hopefuls for that role.
Yeah, what
a coincidence. And Jaden Smith he's terrible as well. He's absolutely terrible. Actually, Will Smith and Jaden Smith have played together before and are in this, I think, rather good heart warmer called The Pursuit of Happiness, which wasn't bad at all. At least it had a warm heart. It was kind of open and ingenuous. Whereas this is stilted and terrible, and it's just boring. It's just boring.
Is it? You make it sound like it's a sort of glorified vanity project. Because I know that the story idea,
Smith's. And what a heart sinker that is to see story idea by Will Smith. I think with anybody else in charge, it might have worked. Mm. If it had been somebody else who wasn't quite as up himself as the great man is these days. But what happens is that despite what you see in the poster, despite seeing Will Smith and Jaden Smith together in this very bold and dramatic way, they're apart for most of the movie. The idea is they crash land, and I'm not giving anything away because this happens at the very beginning, they crash land and Jaden has to journey to the far side of the planet to recover this MacGuffin, which is the intergalactic flare device, which will recover help. And to do that, he has to get past these sinister beasts which feed on human fear. And so he has to go into a Zen state beyond fear, which his father has famously mastered. Although, of course, he has mastered it at the cost of being emotionally cold and unavailable for his boy.
How's Jaden's Zen state?
Not as Zen as my state. I went into a real Zen state, really. I mean, my goodness, it is dull. I mean, everybody's face, Jaden's face and Will's face, that sort of pudding, like a wet weekend in Wigan. Really, my goodness, it is dull.
We need that beacon. You understand? You are going to retrieve that beacon, or we are going to die.
That's Will and Jaden Smith up to their necks in trouble in the apparently awful After Earth. Now I think it's high time that we raised the tone and brought a little class to the proceedings. Here's Michael Douglas as Liberace.
Ladies and gentlemen, the star of the show, Liberace!
Wow! Thank you very, very much.
This is my friend Scott Thorson.
Behind the candelabra is director Steven Soderbergh's tart, poisoned Valentine to Liberace and his lover Scott Thorson, who doubled as the entertainer's brocaded chauffeur. It's dark, it's funny, it's perfectly played. Matt Damon does a grand job as the lunkishly innocent Scott, while Michael Douglas's Lee towers over the proceedings like some ghastly angel of tat.
This is my houseboy. He rules the roost around here.
Catherine, we've seen Michael Douglas in a variety of roles, but nothing quite like this.
No, and it's absolutely game-changing performance. It's the best performance he's ever given for me by quite some distance. Everyone's amazing in it. We all, I think, love this film. We've talked about it before at Cannes. It's interesting, you know, it's getting this theatrical release here, whereas in America it was on HBO. And I, you know, people have been going on about how HBO, you know, has done this movie and that's very exciting and it's a Soderbergh film and it's one of Soderbergh's best films. I think it's actually also a TV movie in the very, very best sense, in that it sort of dispenses with any pretense at sort of auteurism or anything other than entertainment. Mm. It goes
telling
on...
Telling the story.
Tells the story at a fair old lick, and it keeps it really funny and really fast. And there's a sort of 10-minute sag, I think, at about the two-thirds mark for me. But
that's the kind of gear-changing moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where it starts out as this kind of biting comedy of grotesques, and then, weirdly, at the end, there's something moving about it. And that is a sort of transition to that, I think.
You see, that's the one thing about it. I completely loved it. It's an absolute five-star film for me. I didn't find it moving. It didn't touch me in that way. I mean, I loved his monologue about why do you love me? It's because you listen to me and because you just are an echo of me. I find that all very interesting. I never, ever found it moving. And yet, I absolutely adore it.
Peter, everyone's talking about Michael Douglas in this, but Matt Damon's great as well, isn't he? And it's a much more tricky role, in a way.
It's a very tricky role, and he does it with so openly and with such ease and calm. The idea of two straight actors playing two gay guys, I think I had a microsecond of concern about that on my way into the cinema, but then I just forgot about it entirely. I just thought they inhabited the roles with such technique and such mastery. And Soderbergh, you could almost feel how satisfied he is with every shot, with every sequence, with every edit. It's just done so well. Mm. It cracks along. The only thing I possibly wasn't quite down with, the rather sentimental tone of the very end. But it worked very well on its own terms, very well indeed. I thought it was, it's, as Catherine says, it's terrifically good. There's so many things. It's one of those things that I wish I'd been old enough to see Liberace play live. One of the interesting things about his...
We all wish
I sort of wish that the way that I wish I'd seen, as it were, Elvis play Vegas. Now I wish I'd seen Liberace play Vegas. I mean, my goodness, to watch his... That musicianship, that, the other thing is, it paid tribute to his absolutely effortless musicianship.
It's funny as well, isn't it? There's that kind of ghoulish comedy about the cosmetic surgery business in LA with a great performance from Rob Lowe as this vampiric plastic surgeon who wants to make Matt Damon up to look like Liberace. And Matt Damon's response is, I guess I should be flattered.
Yeah. It's incredible. But why aren't there cosmetic surgery montages in every film? I was watching it thinking, God, this is great. You know, this has got its own... This is a goldmine, this. Why isn't this in lots of films? So he seems to have made a discovery.
I want you to make Scott look like this. Can you do that?
Oh, I see. Oh, yes, I think I can do what you want. He's gonna need a nose job. And I'm gonna have to restructure his cheekbones and his chin with silicone implants, but it's not impossible. But first, we gotta slim him down. I have a terrific diet, the California diet. Guaranteed loss of 15 pounds in 4 weeks.
Matt Damon and Michael Douglas in the altogether excellent Behind the Candelabra. Let's now move from one true life tale of a consummate professional to another. Here's Michael Shannon as the Iceman.
Yeah. Fucking guys, cold as ice. Come on, you gotta feel something for somebody. Got a girlfriend?
I'm married.
Then why do you act like you don't give a shit?
Richard Kuklinski was a loving family man who also happened to be a remorseless mafia hitman, responsible for between 100 and 200 murders. Ariel Vroman's true crime saga swaggers through seedy 1970s New Jersey and boasts a brooding, at times volcanic, performance from Michael Shannon in the title role.
Put the bum out of his misery. If you don't have it in you, now's the time to say it.
Peter, who could have guessed that Richard Kuklinski, who killed 100 people, was a sort of nasty piece of work?
Yeah, exactly. What a surprise. Perhaps what's slightly more surprising is he had these notes of self-pity and pomposity, which make for a very unattractive screen persona, but might have been exactly accurate. I found this an interesting movie. It's well made, with a very sure sense of time and place. Ariel Vroman has clearly learned from the master, Scorsese, and Goodfellas, and it is comparable to Goodfellas in its sense of style.
Yeah, and its casting.
Yes. Whenever I see Ray Liotta now, he always comes back. He's always in a minor role, and it always makes me slightly sad to think he never has got, again, a role comparable to his great role as Henry Hill in Goodfellas, something which clearly owes an awful lot to. He's good in it, though. Ray Liotta comes on, and my goodness, he really delivers everything he is.
He's just got that kind of menace.
He's really menacing. I mean, he really does bring 100% proof in a way that very few actors do, although Michael Shannon does in his own way. Again, a little bit typecast. But the comparison with Goodfellas, unfortunately, comes at a cost, because Goodfellas made you care about Henry Hill. And when Henry Hill gets arrested at the end, there is something emotional and even slightly tragic. When something like that happens to Richard Kuklinski, you think, oh God, so what?
About time.
Yeah, so what? He doesn't really have the kind of satanic glamour of a real serial killer either, in a strange way. I remember comparing it to Zodiac at the time, and there is a weird Zodiac-y vibe in that you get the impression that he's getting paid for doing something which is sort of his hobby, that if he wasn't getting paid for doing it, he would end up in some sort of position whereby he would be killing hundreds of people anyway.
Catherine, you could say it's a good portrait of the banality of evil, though, that there isn't a glamour about this kind of business. It's grubby, it's dirty, it's brutish, and it's carried out by these sort of implacable, unpleasant people. And surely that's a worthwhile topic for a film?
Yeah, I suppose it's worthwhile. It doesn't make for perhaps the most gripping film. I mean, you know, he's not just icy, he's just sort of blank. It didn't really come together for me. And the sort of, we were talking about how the other film was a TV movie. This is quite a TV movie in a lot of respects, and not in a very kind of, not in a very good one. I thought the subplot with the brother was particularly unsatisfying, really. He's got a brother in prison and they've both been kind of abused as kids. I thought that was very token. You can just feel where the cameras are, I think, with this film.
Carter.
What?
This is your last chance. Thank God's busy.
Michael Shannon as the Iceman. And we end the show, fittingly enough, with the last film from the late great French director Claude Miller. It's set in the 1920s, it stars Audrey Tautou, and it's called Thérèse d'Escuerolles.
Mais maintenant vous n'avez plus qu'à écouter. Recevoir mes ordres. C'est moi qui décide de tout.
Audrey Tautou, her face scrunched like a sour raisin, is Thérèse, straining at the leash of bourgeois constraints and kicking against her provincial marriage to the boorish Bernard. Claude Miller's exacting period drama comes adapted from the 1920s novel by François Mauriac and moves stealthily towards betrayal and punishment.
Il est primordial qu'on nous croie unis. Je vais donc m'installer ici, près de vous, le temps qu'il faudra. Il va sans dire que nous ferons chambre à part. Vous prendrez vos repas dans la vôtre, servi par Baliante.
Et tante Clara?
Est-ce que je peux parler sans être interrompue, Thérèse?
Catherine, you may not have had much sympathy for Michael Shannon in The Iceman, but did Audrey Tautou make your heart bleed?
No, she doesn't, but she does sort of make it pump a bit because she's it's such a bizarre and sort of impressive and unvain performance. She's such a bitch in it. And she's got this sort of pursed little face that's forever cross, forever angry, forever sort of thinking and processing in a very creepy sort of way. I mean, there's sort of elements of kind of Rachel Cusk, and it's quite compelling, or sort of Misery as well. It's sort of really, you know, she's like Michael Shannon in a way, apart from the fact that the main thing about him was that he was incredibly prolific. She doesn't even manage to, you know, knock off one person, really. But I quite like this film, actually. I thought it was really quite impressive. And it's very dusty, and it's quite sort of hard to get immersed into. And your sympathies are meant to be with her, and of course they're not. But she's, you know, unlike, say, Keira Knightley in Anna Karenina, where you are meant to feel sorry for her, you know, and you don't. And you hate yourself for it. Here, this is just a sort of compellingly horrible little person, sort of, I mean, you know, poor thing, you know, imprisoned in all these pine trees and with all this wealth.
11,000 acre estate.
Yeah. We all got troubles. But yes. I liked it, I thought it was good.
Peter, what did you think?
I thought it perhaps didn't have access to the interior of her mind in the way that the book possibly would have. But what a fascinating idea. It's not Flaubertian. She's not like Madame Bovary at all. She's somebody who's not very romantic. She's notionally a sort of a free thinker, but with a very strong sense of how great it is to be rich and how great it would be to be even more rich if she married this dull fellow. It's sort of like a suspense thriller, but very unlike almost anything else. And there is something really claustrophobic and airless about what's being described and what's being evoked. It is very, very French as well. It's the real France profonde, very unlike the sugary populaire, for example, which in its own way is rather French. It has that very sugary tone. Whereas this isn't sugary at all, but my goodness,
what a... This is sort of well-upholstered dark furniture.
It's like a dark... There's lots of scenes of people drinking wine as well, that kind of dark clarity, if I may use that rather Anglo-Saxon word. Real taste, or strong, intense taste.
Yeah,
exactly. And a little of it goes a long way, in a way. But my goodness, it really is a strong taste.
Six, sept, huit, neuf. Où tu vas?
À la cuisine. Je mangerai bien une petite omelette, là.
Des œufs. Mais tu viens de passer 2 jours au lit et à la diète.
Justement. Faut que je suis sur pied, faut que je reprenne des forces. crois que ma mère avait raison, c'est l'incendie de Mano qui m'affiche plus en l'air.
Oui.
Oh, zut, j'avais oublié mes gouttes.
J'allais te les préparer.
Voilà, je vais le faire. Ah oui, je compte mes gouttes.
J'ai demandé à Ballon de te faire ton omelette.
Merci, mon ange.
Audrey Tautou in Thérèse Descoureaux. My thanks, as ever, to Peter and Catherine for joining me on the high chairs this week. The reason we're on the high chairs this week, actually, is because, incredibly, the couch that we normally sit on has been shipped out to Cannes for the TV festival. The couch is having a great time. The couch gets all the best gigs. Thanks to you for watching. We'll be back on the high chairs next week.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.